Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic. Covenstead is brought to you by the co-creators of Ironbound, Guardians of Nirvala. Ironbound is a fantasy TTRPG about witches versus machines. Become one of the brave Ironbound and use your magic to defend Nirvala from the mechanized locust-like apothecary.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Covenstead. So today, first of all, I'm Danny. So let's get into introducing myself. I mean, though, if you're on the third episode, you should know my voice by now. So
that is true. But if you're also like me, who is Todd, names take a while to start to resonate with you. So it is very helpful for especially older middle-aged men, you know, like myself.
Yeah, so I'm Danny and I have Todd with me, and we are writers and designers for role-playing games. That's what we do. And we've been talking about a couple different topics. We talked about in our first episode kind of what we're all about and why we're doing this and what we're working on. And then in the episode after that, we talked about magic and how to incorporate magic in games. And today we're going to be talking about goal setting.
Yes.
Setting goals and how to set goals in games and in magic and what that has to do with anything and how it can help you and how it can hinder you and things to watch out for and what are good goals, what are unrealistic goals, you know, all sorts of stuff. We're going to talk about whatever comes to our mind when it comes to setting goals. And yeah, so why don't you go ahead and start, Todd? Did you have anything particular you wanted to start off with, or a question, well, or thought?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like in general, when it comes to setting goals, I know for me, it is something where it's a very precarious situation, because I can end up becoming too ambitious with setting goals. And then it starts becoming unrealistic because I start getting bogged down by trying to get so many things done that didn't necessarily have to be done, kind of thing, you know. But at the same time, too, I need to set goals, even just at a very simple level, because without them, I can easily lose track and just be like a dog running around chasing his own tail. Yeah. So yeah, it's this very kind of, I have a very love-hate relationship with goals, is that I love to set them, but then the problem is actually going through and executing all the goals that I have set up.
Yeah. For me, I do like setting goals. I'm a very organized personality, I guess. You know, there's been lots of words for that over the years, but essentially I'm one of those people that likes to be very organized. I have a planner, I have to-do lists and all that sort of thing. And I found the tried and true SMART goals, as long as that thing has been around, and, you know, as many people, you know, it's kind of cliche to say that now, but it always has worked for me. For anyone who doesn't know what SMART goals are, SMART is a acronym, and it's for how you should go about setting goals. So S is for specific. So be specific, you know, don't be like vague, like I'm going to, you know, clean the house, you know, that's too vague. You know, you got to be more specific. You got to say, I am going to sweep the floor, you know, specific. Measurable. You got to be able to measure when you've completed the goal, or else how are you going to know? You know, saying something like I'm going to be successful is not really measurable. And then it's got to be achievable, and it's got to be, you know, relevant and time bound. So it's got to be achievable. It's got to be something you can feasibly do. Saying something like I'm going to win this award, it's not exactly achievable. Like you could do it, but you really don't have a lot of control over it. So it also has to be something you have control over. and can do. You know, saying like, I'm going to get published next year, it's not really achievable because that only has a little bit to do with you. So saying, you know, you're going to finish so many stories or you're going to do so much writing is a much more achievable, smart goal. And then of course, relevant. So it's got to be focused on where you're trying to go. It's got to be relevant to the direction you're trying to head. And the last is time bound. So you set a time limit. Like, I'm going to do this in a month. By the time, you know, this time, this next month rolls around, I will have completed this. And it's always worked well for me, and it works well for both role-playing games and magic, and it works well for a lot of things. So, you know, I usually try to think of, you know, is it something I have control over? Is it a measurable, smart goal? Is it relevant to where I want to be? And stuff like that when I'm trying to set a goal for the day or the month or the year or whatever. And adjust accordingly. Does that make sense?
It does, actually. And then it starts to get even more complicated when other people start getting involved in the process. So you know, and especially too, like, you know, if you're looking to do a ritual that has, you know, like more than one person, you know, you want to make sure that you have shared goals going into this, because mm-hmm. that is going to help with the entire process. If you are working on, you know, if you're working on starting up a new campaign, everyone still has to have some shared goals to make sure that you're all moving in the same direction. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time too, everyone's going to have like their own little individual mini goals and things that they want to get out of it. You know, like what is something that they want to do specifically with their character, or, mm-hmm. you know, where, you know, like as I want to have, you know, I want to perform a blessing to basically, you know, give myself good luck and good fortune, you know, as I go forward, I have a new job interview, you know, or we all are, you know, working on, we're going to start up our new business, you know, and each one can have their own reasons for wanting to do that, but it's all still working in the same direction. So once you start having, it can already be difficult enough setting goals for yourself, smart goals, and moving forward with them and actually making them happen. Then you've got other people coming in, and now you've got to be able to balance everything in order to keep it moving, because it complicates the matter once everyone else gets on board. Unless you have a complete and total clone that you actually share, like, you know, a telepathic link with, and you all know exactly what you're thinking in any given moment.
Right.
You got to do a little bit of juggling and some adjusting and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Your goals need to be able to be adjusted. You have to, you can't. And this is as someone who tends to be in that mode of, because I have such a kind of like organized personality. They used to kind of call them type A back in the day, you know, like just very organized and stuff like that. I do have a tendency to get focused on this is what's going to happen. And so if it doesn't, it gets annoying. And I've had to learn over the years that, yeah, you make the goal and you make it achievable and you try to do all those things. But sometimes, and like you said, especially if there's other people involved, like with a ritual or a game or something like that, that doesn't always work out. So you have to be able to say, this is what I'm going to try to achieve, but I'm also going to be flexible, because sometimes goals change. You know, somebody does something in a game and it totally throws off where you were going, but you're rolling with it. So now you have to sit there and reassess your goals and what's happening and everything like that, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I usually, and how I do that in particular in games is I've talked about sort of floating keys before in games. Where, you know, like you have something in game that you want the players to know or find out, right? You know, you get some piece of plot or whatever's going on or a reveal and stuff like that. That's a key, right? It's a clue. It's something that, you know, you want the players to have to move on, like progress in the story. Right. Whether that be they're trying to track down this particular person, they're trying to find this particular resource, whatever it happens to be. And I use floating keys rather than saying, okay, the characters are after this person. They're trying to find this person. So this person has gone here, right? And I pick a place and I say, this is where the person is. If the players go here, they're going to find that person. I don't do that at all because it's going to guarantee that the players are not going to go there. They're going to find something interesting else to do somewhere else.
That's right. They're going to come up with their own version of how things should be playing out, because in their mind, this, all these clues from before, we need to go to Amsterdam. And meanwhile, you as the GM in your head are just like, no, Amherst, you need to go to Amherst, New York, Amherst. Not Amsterdam.
You know? Wrong am. But yeah. So really what I do is I say, this is a goal. They need to meet this NPC. That's my goal. But in order to make sure that it's a smart goal, that it's achievable and whatever, I don't hold it in place. I say, okay, they're going to meet this person at one point, right? But I leave that open as to where it is, depending on where the players go. I can make some guesses. You know, I can say, well, they can meet him here, 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 if they go to any of these places, but they may surprise me. And so whatever it happens, I just have that person be there, right? Because if they're looking for this NPC, right? If that's what they're doing, and they're finally going to meet this person, wherever they go is going to have some logical reasoning in their mind, right? So no matter where I put that person, that NPC, it's going to make sense to them because they went there thinking that there was a possibility that they might be there. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's very similar to how I like to do things. You know, when it comes to, it's really more so about setting a story beat for when something needs to happen in the story that you're telling, rather than where it needs to happen and what event needs to trigger it. Because a lot of that depends on, you know, everyone doing exactly what you predicted that they were going to do, or that whoever wrote the adventure predicted what they're going to do. My experience from my early days of GMing was that there's absolutely no reason to believe that anybody is going to do exactly what you predicted. Because, and you know, players, one of the things that I think is, you know, I guess the word I want to use is problematic when it comes to telling stories through role-playing games, is that we often make so many comparisons to other forms of media where it's one person deciding what everybody's going to do. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if the heroes walk in on the villain at just the right moment and are about to stop them, it's because that author decided that that's what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a role-playing game, you've got individual people who are trying to move towards a certain direction, but at the same time too, everyone has their own little creative ideas, interpretations that are starting to apply to it. So having that kind of flexibility to say, oh crap, they're going to Amsterdam. All right, well, that's fine because I can still have the villain pop up in Amsterdam. Right, doesn't have to be, you know, like I can make these adjustments and this kind of thing. Unless it turns out that they need to go to Fort Knox in particular, because, you know, that's where this is being kept, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But even then, that just kind of says, okay, clearly they're going in the wrong direction. I need to help them out to make sure that they're getting this right.
And in that case, the floating key would be the knowledge they need to go to Fort Knox, right? Like your clue would not be, they're going to get to Fort Knox. Instead, it would be, since you are trying to get them to a particular set piece, they would find somewhere else, something else that would lead them to Fort Knox instead. So, you know, you would put something in there that would definitely say, this is where you need to go, right? Either have an NPC tell them or have them find something like a communication or whatever that says, you know, Fort Knox, you know, or have them decipher something that says Fort Knox, you know? So then they're like, oh, we got to go. And it's not ambiguous, you know?
And it feels like that they got there themselves, that they figured it out.
Yeah.
Because this is a community process. Everyone who has gathered around to play this game wants to be able to contribute something to this, whether or not it's just like, I'm just here to reduce monsters' hit points, man. That's it. I'm just here to kill monsters, versus I want to discover something about this character. Mm-hmm. You know, the goals of the story that you're telling with the game has to be able to work for everybody and be flexible enough to make room for these even last minute sudden, you know, changes, shifts in direction, a new approach, new players, you know, someone's character dies and it turns out that that character was the one that had the key and they fell into lava. So now the key is destroyed. What are you going to do about that? You need that key. You know, like everything has to be flexible, because there's one time, this reminds me of something, of how the dangers of being way too firm and literal with your goals can actually backfire. There was a game that we played, and it was like a sci-fi space kind of game. It's hard for me to remember details because I ended up missing half the sessions. But there was basically a point where we were like a ragtag crew of like kind of space pirates or some kind of thing like this. And we decided that we were going to, you know, take over this vessel and by storming the bridge. And when we did storm the bridge, there was a security officer who, you know, drew a weapon. It looked like they were about to draw a weapon. And so one of the players decided to be preemptive and shoot first. But in doing so, killed like a vital crew member. And because the GM was very firm in their goals, everything was, you know, there were things that were very absolute. Because we shot one of the crew members, the GM basically closed everything up and said, no, that's it. They're not going to help you. You know, like they're under no circumstances will they help anybody who shoots one of their other crew members. And then that was it. And then we stopped playing. Like the GM was done. That was it. It's like, we broke the game. No can do, cannot proceed any further.
Oh.
And yeah, and it was kind of like, you know, it was a bit of a pisser at the time, because it was just like, well, you know, they can't, I mean, what are we dealing with, robots? No, they're people with like humans, you know, they have emotions and feelings and thoughts, and you know, they adapt. So, you know, having something that's way too firm, you could end up with situations like that, and it really takes the wind out of everybody's sails. I've seen groups break up over stuff like this, where it's just like, well, now I don't feel like I'm actually contributing anything. I'm just here to facilitate your idea and make sure that it happens exactly the way that you wanted it. And that's not of interest for people. So there are definite drawbacks to being like way too firm on your goals.
Yeah, yeah. I think some people think of goals as like achievements, right? Like instead of, like they take them as very solid, and I do have an issue with that, and it's something I've been working on, you know. But gaming and you know, ritual and stuff has helped me loosen on that a bit. Where, you know, if they set a goal, somehow it's already happened in their mind and it's already like achieved, like that's what's going to happen, and they get it so solidly in their mind that then it then throws them off. So goals are goals, you know, they're what you aim for. But if you miss exactly what you had in mind, it's not a disaster. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a deadline or an end game. You know, it's a goal. It's something you're trying to reach. It's in process. You know, it's not an achievement. It's not already done. It's not, I've said it, so now it has to happen. This is just, hey, this is what I'm going to try to do, and to have that in mind so you can progress that way. But if it doesn't happen exactly that way, then that's not a big, you know, it's not a big deal, you know, if you don't hit it. It's just that's what you were trying to hit. And even if you come close, you came close, you know, like, you know, hey, say you know, even a small one, like say you wanted to hit 1,000 words, you know, that's your goal. You know, so if you want to hit 1,000 words today and you're like, that's what I'm going to do, that's my goal, and you have it in your mind, and then you don't hit 1,000 words, like you can either let it ruin your whole day, like, oh, I didn't hit my goal, you know, I didn't do 1,000 words, you know, like, and just be messed up and feel like a failure and let it ruin your whole day and say, because you set this goal and you didn't achieve it. Or you can be flexible and say, yeah, I tried to hit 1,000 words, but I wrote 500 or I wrote 100, and that's better than nothing, right? Like, it's to motivate you to progress. It's not a be all end all, you know? So it's a goal. It's what you say you're going to try to do that you feel like is achievable, you know? But then even if you fall short in some way, you know, you still move forward, even if it's in a small way, you know?
Yeah, I find the term target sometimes could be more applicable because, you know, as I understand from people who do actually shoot bows and arrows, when you're aiming at the target, yes, the goal is you want to hit dead center. You want to hit a very specific part of the target. But really, when it comes down to it, the goal is to hit the target.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, rather than like you got to, you know, setting a goal that is the center, the bullseye of the target, your goal needs to be something where it's like, well, as long as we still hit the target itself, I will still gain some points. And then I just have to make adjustments and say, oh, okay, well now I need to try and shoot a little closer, or I need to completely readjust how I'm shooting. The wind is obviously playing a factor. I need to make adjustments. It's not like, oh, I failed my first shot. Well, nuts to this. Bye-bye, Olympics. I'm out of here, you know.
Right.
Storm off while you snap your bow on your knee, you know. Right. You make adjustments. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's what you do. And that's why I find sometimes I like to look at it as I set a target. In general, I want to lean into this direction. I want to find a way to get these characters really infuriated with the villain. I want to make this personal, and I'm going to push in that direction with these ideas. But at the same time too, if I have to make an adjustment, you know,
Yeah. Like with the 1,000 words example, it's like, okay, I hit 500 today and I'm like, yeah, you know, I didn't hit 1,000, but you know, tomorrow I'm going to try for 1,000 again. Right. And I do that for a couple weeks. Right. And then I find that I'm hitting 500 every time or close to 500. So I say, you know, maybe my 1,000 words was not achievable for me at this time. Maybe I should adjust my goal, adjust my target to say I'm going to do 500. Right. And then I start meeting it and meeting it and meeting it and maybe even exceeding it. And then I look at saying, okay, well, now I've kind of built myself up and now I'm hitting close to 1,000. So now I can make my goal 1,000. You know, people, when they're training, you know, like athletes and stuff like that, they kind of do that all the time. You know, adjust and adjust, go back and try to go forward, go back and go forward, go back and go forward, go back and go forward, you know, and their go back is a little further every time, right? You know, they'll try, I'm going to hit this speed, this speed, this speed. That's not happening. Okay, what if I try to hit this speed, this speed, this speed? Okay, I can do that. Now I build myself up to try to get to the next one. You know what I mean? It's all about being able to adjust. And like you said, it's more of a target. You know, that's a really good way to looking at it. It's more of a target. And targets are not static. And that's really what I was trying to say before. You know, I sometimes have a problem with thinking of them as static. You know, that's my goal. If I don't make it, that's it. You know, but they're not. Goals are not supposed to be static. And I think that's someone that people should take in mind when they're doing magic and when they're doing games. You know, goals are not static. They're just not. They're meant to be adjusted. They're meant to change as you move farther along and have to, you know, and you're progressing in whatever it is you're trying to do, a game or a ritual or something like that. And rituals are the same way. You know, you go into a ritual with a goal, but you got to leave it open and flexible enough for what needs to happen to happen. You know what I mean? If you go in there with specific ideas of a ritual or a spell or whatever, and you say, this is exactly what's going to happen, this is exactly what I need, this is exactly what I'm going to do, then, you know, you're kind of, you know, not allowing the process to be in full. You know, you go in there with a goal, and but then you leave it open enough for things to happen and, you know, improv if you need to, and kind of let whatever your goal is go in the direction that it needs to go. You know, you may go in there thinking, you know, oh, I need this. I need to do a ritual to like calm my mind. Right. You know, I need a ritual to like help me calm down. It's been an upsetting week and I need to calm down. So I'm going to do this ritual and I'm going to call the elements, and, you know, I'm going to make a circle, and I'm going to use a circle to calm myself down, to like calm my mind, and, you know, whatever. Right. And if you're rigid, you can do that. And maybe you feel fine after, maybe it works, or maybe it didn't quite work. You don't feel as calm after. You know, if you have a rigid idea of a goal and what you're trying to achieve, you know, that that can very well happen. If you have a little more, you know, are open to knowing that goals are constantly changing, and you go in there with an open mind, maybe you thought you needed some calming meditation and it was stress, right? But maybe it was something else, you know, maybe it was a physical thing. You know, and when you allow that process to take place and you say, you know, I'm not beholden to my goal, it's just, this is the problem I'm working on. You realize it. You're like, oh, I'm not stressed out. I've got this huge knot in my back. You know what I mean? Like, I need to go to a masseuse or something, you know, it could, you have to leave yourself open to, you know, what you're assuming something is. It is not exactly how it needs to be handled, you know? So you need to do that in rituals and stuff too, and be open to, you know, the idea of solving your problem maybe look a little different than you expected.
Yeah. And especially too, like when you're trying out a new ritual, a new spell, you know, even any kind of new technique, even if it's, you know, a new yoga pose, you know, mm-hmm. It's one thing to try, you know, this is what someone else has discovered and experienced for themselves, and this is what works well for them. And others are encouraged to try, but there's always going to be, need to be little variables. So for mm-hmm. example, a lot of times when I meditate and when I'm going through guided meditations, they'll say something specifically about how to sit, or that you should be sitting in a chair or something. But mm-hmm. for me personally, I find lying down on the bed takes that pressure off of the parts of the body that actually, you know, tend to irritate me the most. And so then I can just focus on the meditation itself and yeah. not be like, oh, I hope I get into the zone before my back starts to act up or anything like that.
Right. And if you had been rigid and thought, oh, I need to sit this way to meditate, or I'm not doing it right, then you would have been uncomfortable. And you wouldn't have achieved your goal. That actually takes you farther away from your goal and not closer to it, right? You were thinking, oh, I won't achieve my goal of meditating if I don't sit this way that they say. You know what I mean? And then you don't achieve it, and you're actually going farther away from your goal, right? But if you're open to it and realize that your end goal is to have a meditation, that's the real goal. You know, not the trappings of it. That's the real achievable goal. And being flexible in how you achieve that goal, you know, allows you to say, you know what, I'm going to lie down, because that's how it works, that for me, and everything. And ritual and even games are like that too. You know, like, I mean, I can't imagine there's a lot of GMs or storytellers out there that haven't like pulled things from other games, you know, or, you know, and snuck them into the one that they were doing because they liked it, you know, or saw somebody else doing something and thought, I'm going to do that too. You know, we see things, we try things out, see if they work for us, and everyone's different. You know, we're all trying to get to the same goal, and we all do trial and error to try to figure out, you know, how to get there and stuff like that, you know, and you just got to be open to that process.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot like cooking, I find, in many ways, in that, like, there's this dish that my mom used to make all the time when I was a kid, and it was called pizza casserole. It doesn't resemble pizza in any way, shape, or form, but I had a severe dairy allergy, and so being able to call it pizza was a cheat. It was a way to make me feel like I'm getting some pizza in my diet when all my other friends got to actually eat pizza. Right. But over time, and now that I'm an adult, well into adulthood, I cook it at home, but I make it now my way, because my palate has changed over time. And it's something where I get, you know, more enjoyment out of it. And in many cases too, I even like to modify it, because sometimes I like it to have a little bit more of a spicy kind of a kick to it. Or if I know I'm the only one that's going to eat this, or maybe my wife is going to eat this and she really can't handle spice, you know, I try and mix things up. You know, in the winter, I tend to put a lot more veggies and I mix, you know, I do like a beef pork kind of mix to it. And then other times in the summer where it's too damn hot in the house and I don't want the oven on for long, I keep it simple, bare minimum, you know? So
yeah,
it's adjustable, but when it comes down to it, I'm still making pizza casserole, but it's, you know, I'm not working a restaurant where everyone who comes in wants the exact same experience every time they come in. Right. I'm cooking something for the sake of myself and what I want to get out of it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a good, you know, and you have to realize, you know, not only do you have to be flexible in the way that you achieve your goals, you know, try to hit your target, and you have to be flexible. You know, and some people are like, well, if you're just going to kind of do what happens, you know, why set goals in the first place? But like we both said, you have a direction you want to move in. So a goal is pushing yourself in that direction. You know, that doesn't mean you're going to go a straight line, but having a goal points you south instead of north. If you don't want to go north, you know, you don't want to randomize it. You want to at least make sure you're heading south in some way, shape, or form. You know, so, you know, a goal, make sure you're at least facing the right direction that you want to go. Even if you don't do a straight line there and you kind of zigzag around and have to shift and whatever, you're still slowly moving in the proper direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But now, the other
what? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but the other part of being flexible is that you also have to understand when a goal may not be feasible anymore. You may have a goal and you may at some point realize that that's no longer a goal for you. Like you don't even want to be heading that direction anymore. Like I made a huge mistake heading south, you know, that was huge. Well, why was I going in that direction in the first place? And yeah, you have to also be willing to assess part of goal setting is assessing it as you go along and saying, is this still where I want to be going? Am I still progressing in that direction? You know, and ask yourselves those questions. And if not, either adjusting so you are heading in that direction or letting that goal go and creating a new goal in a different direction.
Yeah, because there are times where something more appealing suddenly presents itself. And this is something that I experience a lot when I go hiking into areas that I haven't really explored too much before. Or like, you know, this time of year, you know, being up in Canada, you know, leaves, you know, are gone. You know, the forest is a lot clearer because I live close to quite a few hiking and ski trails and everything. And all of a sudden, a route that you couldn't see when the foliage was really full suddenly presents itself. And it's just like, oh, there's an old creek that used to be here and now it's barren and now it makes a bit of a trail. And so it all of a sudden becomes more interesting because it's just like, well, I did want to go up to the vista and check out the view, but at the same time too, I want to see where this goes because this could be interesting, you know? And now the goal has changed. I'm still out for a hike. I'm still enjoying nature, but now there's something that's more interesting and I've adapted it as I go so that when I'm done, I mean, unless it turns out it's just like, oh, it leads to an old outhouse. Well, that's not what I was looking forward to. And now I want to check my boots to see how dirty they are, you know, but it's still, you know, if that sense of exploration and discovery is one of the things that you enjoy about hiking, like I do, then even a shitty discovery, literally and figuratively, is still a discovery. You know, it's still something that's just like, well, now I know something compared to what I used to know. And that, you know, as long as that's the target, you know, it's just like, I find it just makes it a lot easier, overall in general, because then you will also learn from it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so far, I mean, those are the two things I think it's really important is that, you know, doing for me personally, goal setting, I try to set a SMART goal and then I assess it at various points, just to make sure that that's still where I want to go. And that's still, you know, so those are the two real big points. And that works in gaming, and that works for magic and ritual as well, and stuff like that. You mentioned like back near the beginning about, you know, when you set a goal for your characters my question is, how do you set a goal for your character? I mean, do you sit there and think, I want a character that does this and wants this and has this backstory? Or are you more the type of person who's going to be like, I'm going to make this type of person and see what happens? Like, do you have it like sometimes an arc in mind or something when you make a character, or no, like a goal for your character?
Yeah, not as much anymore. I very much used to when I first started playing. And I like to make the distinction between playing and GMing, even though the GM is also a player. That could be another episode unto itself. But mm-hmm. specifically playing, which is, I'm just there to represent this one character and maybe their pet familiar. But when I first started, yeah, I would have a very specific goal in mind. I want it to be this. I want this character to be strange and very alien. And I want to have, you know, like these kind of abilities, and I want to be able to do this kind of stuff with this character. And then suddenly getting into the game and realizing, oh, not all that stuff quite gelled, you know, or it's just like, oh, that wasn't quite working with the rules like I expected it to. And it's to the point now where my style of playing and GMing is so completely improv based that now I just kind of go into it and say, okay, so who are the other characters? What's everyone else making up? And see a way to find something interesting to connect in there. So like there is a game of Nefertiti Overdrive that I played, one of the early play tests that I did with the designer, Fraser Ronald. And in that one of the characters decided that he was going to play the princess character. And this character was somebody who was able to use their nobility and everything like that in order to get things done. But they were by no means any kind of a fighter character whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But their abilities were still set up that they could help in a fight. And so I decided, okay, well, someone like that needs to have a bodyguard of some kind. But rather than just making kind of the standard bodyguard, I wanted to make the bodyguard who basically was almost kind of like, if it wasn't for the fact that this person was sworn to protect the princess at all costs, if she wasn't a princess, that my character would be constantly looking at her like, you know, she's my niece who has just been a problem from day one, has no firm grasp on how things actually work, is spoiled and all this other kind of stuff. But because he is beholden to her and she is his queen, he is going to be begrudgingly rolling his eyes, you know, trying to keep her from getting herself into even worse trouble. And it just created this really fun dynamic because she would describe and she would do these things that would just actually make things harder for the group. Potentially it would create complications to the story, but then my character would be able to kind of step in and help to diffuse the situation so that it doesn't get to be as bad, you know? So in many cases, I was protecting her from social problems as well as physical people trying to actually kill her.
Yeah. And that brings us to another good thing that I kind of forgot to say about goals. Like before you set your SMART goal, you know, and you say, okay, this is where I want to go. You have to have enough information to figure out where you want to go, at least as much as possible. And that kind of goes to your talking about, you know, well, now I improv, I see what I have and stuff like that. And I tend to do that too. I don't create like a story for any campaign that I'm in or running before I see the characters everybody wants to make, you know? Because it would be weird to set a goal without knowing that, because it'd be weird to set like a goal for the campaign without knowing that, like saying, okay, this is what we're going to deal with. Because it involves other people and what they want to play, and they may not be down with whatever goal I've set. So instead of setting it myself and just deciding, you know, I look at the characters first, and I look at the type of characters people want to play. And then I kind of go from there to give them hooks that, you know, are tailored to what their characters would be interested in. You know, because it's just, like I said, it's easier that way, you know, because you have a better lay of the land, and that goes with any goal as well that you're trying to set. You know, you can't always know everything, but, you know, go in making a goal with as much information as possible so that, you know, you can make a decision about what direction you want to go in. And that's why most of my goals for either my characters or a campaign that I run generally have to do with themes more than anything else. They're not specific, like, oh, by the time the campaign ends, I want my character to like be married, you know, and have kids and have a happy life ever after. By the end of the game, I want my character to like solve the murder of their parents, you know, stuff like that, you know. I don't tend to do that, you know, because I don't want to predict what the outcome is going to be. It'll more be something like, hey, looking at this character I have and the background I've given them, it looks like I'm dealing with a theme of identity. You know, yeah. It looks like I'm dealing with, you know, my character has, you know, trying to figure out who they are or who the people in their life are to them and how they relate to them and stuff like that. Just identity in general. And then that's setting a goal that not only is a goal, I mean, but it's open enough that it's open to pretty much any interpretation you want to put on it. I mean, SMART goals are great for very specific goals like word count, but with something like gaming goals, you have to be a little bit more, you know, loose with them a little bit. You won't necessarily be able to do like a SMART goal in gaming, but you can still keep the questions in mind. Like, is this achievable? You know, you don't want to set a goal for your character that's like, by the end of the game, I'm going to have every character NPC we meet like in love with my character. Like, you know, you can't really predict that. So is that a really great goal to have? Because you can't really dictate if NPCs are going to fall in love with your character or not. You can't. I mean, if you really wanted to have a character like that, you know, that like flirts with everybody and stuff like that, then you just say that, you know, and don't put the onus on the outcome for your goal. You know, my goal is I'm going to flirt with every character I come across, no matter what, in the middle of battle, you know. You know, there I am, I've stolen this carriage and I'm flying through the city and there's some, you know, noble in there and I'm, you know, raising my eyebrows and making quips and flirting while we're running through the streets, you know, whatever, you know, that's a goal that you can have because it doesn't dictate what other people are going to do. It's something you can control just yourself. You know, that doesn't dictate whether they're going to have a good reaction to it, a bad reaction to it, or whatever. It's just, you know, it's got to be a goal centered on yourself. So you can still use that part of SMART goal. You can still use the parts that are, you know, a time, you know, by the end of the game or by the end of this session, you know, I'm going to flirt with everybody, you know, like whatever that happens to be. So you can still do most of it. The one that might be difficult would be like the measurable part. And in terms of that's just because it's a game. So the only real measurement for it would be if you feel satisfied at the end. So I guess you can. I guess I lied thinking about it. You really can measure it because at the end of the game, you say, did I accomplish exploring? You know, the measurement of it would be, do you feel satisfied with the character? I guess yeah. That would be the measurement. At the end of the game, ask yourself, was I satisfied with how that turned out? Was I satisfied how I played that character? Was I satisfied with the story we told? If the answer is yes, then that's your measurement. Then that's how you measure that goal, that you are satisfied with that character, with how that game worked out and stuff like that. And therefore you have achieved your goal.
Yeah. So, Yeah. I mean, it also, you can also use goals to determine what you don't want to accomplish. So going back to the flirty character, if you don't want to have this character, you know, flirt with someone and then it turns out that they start falling in love. If it's just like, no, I just want this to be like this little quirk about my character. My character is just really flirty and it doesn't even matter who. And I played a character like that where, you know, my character was, their sexuality was pretty open. They were a very adventurous, and to them, it was just like a, you know, oh, this could be interesting. This could be fun. And then if I don't enjoy it, I won't do it again. But then I know. And so it was a really good way to, and one of the reasons why I did that was because I wanted to play a flirty character, but I didn't want to encounter a situation where it was just like, you know, my character is, you know, male and straight, and therefore will only flirt with women. But we need to get past the guards at the door, and both the guards are dudes. And I didn't want to go into this whole, like, you know, oh, gee, you know, and start, you know, running along, like, you know, homophobia lines and all this other kind of stuff. It's just like, you know, I didn't want to tackle this issue with this character. I want this character to just be, doesn't matter the situation, this character is able to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it, so the goals can also determine what you don't want to do with a certain something, you know, in the case of a, you know, your character looking for, you know, like having something to do with searching for their identity. If you specifically don't want to get into, you know, your family, you know, like issues of adoption or, you know, who your parents really are or anything like that, for one reason or another, that is part of the goal. To say it's like, my character's trying to find out who they are. They know where they come from. That part's set in stone. I'm not looking to all of a sudden find out my father's Darth Vader. Been there, done that.
Right.
This is more about my character wants to find out who they are as a result of their past moving forward kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that helps keep everybody just like, oh, okay. So we're not going to, in fact, if anything, then we can totally have fun with these kinds of things, you know, right, like that's, you know, it lets you lean on it and then people know where not to take it.
Right. And that's a good point too. Goals not only help you go in the direction you want to go, it also helps you choose what you don't want to go, you know, be like, oh, if I choose that, that is going to take me over there and I don't want to go over there. So, you know, goals not only puts you in the direction you want to go, but it also helps make choices about being able to see, you know, what things you don't want as well. You know, did I ever tell you about my vampire game and my Ventru player, and his ghoul? Did I tell you that story?
It's possible, but I don't remember. But regardless, I don't think any of our listeners have. So regale away.
Okay. Well, it has to do with goals and shifting goals and being open to goals and knowing where you wanted to go, but then things change. I think it's a really good example of it, of having a goal in mind, but being open to things changing. We're talking about Vampire the Masquerade, for anybody who doesn't know. White Wolf, old school. We're playing the original 90s version in my campaign. So the old green book, you know, the old green book. So I have a Vampire the Masquerade game, and I have these players, and one of my players is a Ventru. For those who don't know what Ventru are, they're very kind of businessy, button up suited vampires. You know, they're yuppie vampires.
Corporate blood suckers.
Corporate blood suckers. Yeah. Appropriate. And it's very in line with these type of vampires to have a ghoul, to have a servant, essentially, like a magical servant. In Vampire, you can turn people into ghouls where they are bound to you because you feed them your blood. They're not vampires. You just feed them your blood without draining them. And then they're attached to you and they can do things for you during the day and you know, whatever you happen to need. So when the game started, when we were making characters, he decided that he wanted to have a ghoul. He thought it'd be appropriate for the very aristocratic, very business-oriented, very stereotypical Ventru that he made. And so he said, I'm going to have a ghoul. And I said, okay. So made this ghoul. And his name is Edward. And so, you know, the game starts and he has Edward, and Edward started out when we started the game, and I had talked to everybody, you know, I'm like, Edward will be good to have, you know, around to be able to like posit some ideas and shift things if I need to. And it'll be a good extra set of hands for them to have. Pardon me, I'm coughing, talking too much. And, you know, so I didn't really expect it to blossom, really, right? I just expected that he would be, you know, the goal, you know, was just, I'm going to use him. When I thought about, you know, a goal for Edward and, you know, how he was going to be used in game, I thought, you know, he's an extra pair of hands. He's a good way to help direct them if they get lost on something, you know, just utilitarian, really, you know, I didn't really have anything else in mind. But as the game developed, just because they were interacting with him a lot more than I expected them to, you know what I mean? So Edward started becoming fleshed out as a character, you know? And so I had to shift that goal because Edward started to have personality. So I couldn't just treat him like utilitarian anymore. All of a sudden he had motivations, all of a sudden he had reasons for doing things and stuff like that and everything because of how they were treating him. Now normally you would just treat ghouls like, you know, because ghouls are magically bound to you, you know, you just kind of treat them like that because whatever they're feeling is just basically off the magical link. But they weren't really treating Edward like that, and so it ended up that I made it so that his character was actually not bonded. And the whole reason that he was involved with the Ventru in the first place was because he was in love with him. And so now we have this whole like doomed love story going on in the vampire game between the ghoul and my player's Ventru character. And that wouldn't have happened if I just like not kind of seen where they were going and was willing to shift my goal and stuff. And so now they have this really interesting dynamic going on.
Yeah. And that's reacting to the story that's unfolding, which, you know, is basically how fiction works. Like, you know, even if you're, you know, an author who basically writes, you know, the entire novel completely yourself, there are going to be moments as you're writing where something happens, a certain line of dialogue, an idea suddenly sparks you. And it's just like, I want to see what happens with these two characters. I really enjoy writing scenes with these two. Let's play up on that some more. Wouldn't this be interesting if, you know, you kind of, even to like with television, you know, you get feedback from fans about, you know, how they feel about a character one way or the other. And then you can kind of build off of that. If it's like, wow, you know, everyone really likes the dynamic between these two characters on screen. So we need to, you know, strand them on a deserted island for an episode and really kind of let the two of them just, you know, hog the screen for a while. And then really kind of, you know, do something with that. You got to go with the flow, because otherwise you're just going through, you know, a checklist that is basically, okay, very good. So now we have established this about this character. Excellent. No, we don't want to go that far just yet. We've got 12 other things that we have to do with these 7 other characters before we can get back to yours.
Yeah.
It takes the spontaneity out of it. And there's a place and a time for it. Like there are times as a GM where I do want to accomplish a very specific goal by a certain point in time in the game. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, it's more of like, I need to be able to manipulate the players into doing what I want them to do, because I'm portraying a supervillain and that's what supervillains do. If I'm playing the Lex Luthor of this game, it's not so much that Lex Luthor thought of everything in advance. It's more about how Lex Luthor has tricked the heroes into believing one thing, when in fact they were actually helping him out to accomplish this other goal.
Right.
Where it's like, I need Superman to actually use his heat vision to destroy this giant satellite. But by doing so, it's actually going to allow my satellite to be able to take over, and then nothing can destroy it. And then my plan comes to fruition. So, you know, it has to adapt and adjust. That's one of the reasons why I think if there's any kind of goals that I set in the story, I like to know what the other character's goals are. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's like a simple NPC, what is it that they're trying to get out of this scene or out of this story in general? And then from there, I can adapt and I can adjust because, like, well, you know, he wants this satellite destroyed and they're not buying into it. So I got to do something else. I got to find some other way to get them to get this done because, you know, that's what this character would do. And, so I adjust accordingly. And there is a thrill out of doing it this way, but, you know, setting it down where everything has to go in a very specific order can be really tricky unless you come right out and say to all the players, you know, and I think this applies in any kind of, you know, group-based goal setting. If you just kind of come out and say, look, in order to do what I'm thinking of doing or what I need this to do, we got to hit some very specific benchmarks as we go. Uh-huh. And it's something that I've started applying into my game design. Not quite so much with Ironbound, because this one, I really wanted to make sure that it was kept very free and loose, uh-huh. you know, as a more traditional style. But the games that I'm starting to work on, like Pandora Total Destruction, I'm trying to mechanize basically scene creation in a way mm-hmm. that allows everybody to help create different scenes in the story that are still working in a shared direction, but then also knowing when it's time to pull back.
Right.
So, you know, like there are certain, like if you're in the third and final act of your story, now is not the time to introduce new characters. Now is not the time to bring in new storylines. Now it's time to wrap that shit up. You know, like there's only, if you're reading a book and you've only got 50 pages left, you're just like, well, who's Bertrand? Why is there a Bertrand all of a sudden? And why am I getting their total backstory over the next four pages? Right. We've got to castle this storm.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I find communication is really one of the key aspects of it. So the way it works in Pandora is all players, the game is divided into three acts. And so the first act, obviously, you want to be introducing things. You want to be creating questions because there are mystery elements to the game. The second act, you want to start answering those questions and you want to start figuring out, well, who is the one who is behind this and what is their master plan? It's time to start making revelations. And then act three is, okay, you have all the information you need. Now, what are you going to do about it? You know what the villain is, what their master plan is. How are you going to stop it? And what are you going to do to get ready to stop it?
And then
in each individual act, all players basically roll dice to determine how many scene points they have. And scene points are used to help create a scene. So... Mm-hmm. You know, like in Pandora, training is a very big part of the game where you're playing super powered characters with incredibly destructive powers and you have no freaking idea how to use it. So you start off as being very destructive characters with a lot of difficulty controlling your ability without causing other problems. Mm-hmm. As you play, you got to train to bring it down to make it more manageable. So you can decide when you want to train, when you want to get into the mystery elements some more, or when you want to say, you know what, my character wants to walk up to those bullies over there and give them a piece of my mind. You know, let's make that a scene. And then, you know, so what it does is it allows everyone to have a quick conversation to set the goal for the scene in a way that helps move things forward for each character. Like if someone just says, like, I need to hunker down and I need to train, because I hurt somebody last time. I need to make sure I don't do that again. Where if someone else is just like, oh, I want to see what's going on. That instructor, there's something fishy going on. I've been seeing them poking around the academy at night. I want to follow them. Let's follow them and see what's going on. Mm-hmm. It allows everyone to create the story together. And then by establishing what those goals are, you've set a very clear direction on what you want to do.
Yeah.
And then it also determines when the scene is done, when you've either achieved that goal or you got to this point where the goal is not possible. You know, if the goal was to capture the alien spaceship and the alien spaceship suddenly takes off into hyperdrive without you, you have now me basically fail to meet the scene's goal. So we're going to wrap it up and now we'll figure out what can we do next? How can we follow the ship? All this other kind of stuff.
Yeah. And that's, oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say, and it just really, I find so far it keeps things very flexible, but it also lets people know, okay, we only have so many scene points left. We've got to get to this point. We've got to wrap this up, because then there are automatic scenes that are triggered at the end of each act where it's basically, all right, it's the end of act two. All the scene points are used up. Supervillains making an appearance. Now it's just like they've got to steal one more part to make their giant laser beam of destruction come to life. And this is that moment. Now you've got to stop them, kind of thing, you know, or now yeah. you've got to do something about it, you know, based on what you've done so far. So it right. helps to set these, you know, flexible benchmarks that you're right. still moving in the same direction, but also realizing, no, we don't have time for any more sidebars. You know, we gotta get moving. We gotta laser.
Right. Yeah. And it's pretty good to indicate that. And I do want to, I think you hit it the nail on the head when you said like communication is the key in terms of gaming and stuff and goals, because that's what session zero is for. It's to get the idea of what type of game do your players want, you know, and setting that goal together. You know, are we going to have a lighthearted, very shenanigan filled game? Are we going to have, you know, gritty, dark, et cetera, type game and stuff like that? Like when I had an Aberrant game that I was running, and Aberrant was really good because you could kind of set what type of flavor of superhero game you wanted. And so, and this is just a note of how to set goals, right? So when I talked with my players in session zero, I said, okay, look, we have a superhero game. This is what you all chose. What type of superheroes do you want to be? Like, what are we talking about? Are we talking about like the old school four color comic book Superman type stuff? Are we talking about like The Boys or Hancock, you know, the super gritty, more realistic, dramatic, hardcore like superhero stuff like Logan, you know, stuff like that, you know, or what? And they said, we want Marvel. You know, they said, we want like humor and stuff like that, but we also want to have these dramatic moments and stuff. And that set that goal, right? And that set the goal of, we all knew what we were trying to achieve. We all knew we were trying to achieve a Marvel type feel to the game. And so since all of us had that goal, we can all make choices. We could all make choices via me as the storyteller or my players, all, you know, making choices because we all knew we had that goal, making choices of, this is the vibe that we're going for, you know? So yeah, communication, especially when you're dealing with more than one people, like during gaming and more than one person, like in gaming, or even if you're doing a ritual, not just yourself, or you're doing a ritual with other people, you know, communicating that goal so you're all on the same page is super important.
Yeah. And it brings something to mind that I've been going through recently, going back to Pandora. When I first started working on it, designing it and everything, I had different goals in mind than I do now. And I had a play-by-post game that was running. And it, you know, we were playing the game originally as intended, you know, your destructive characters, you have to attend this academy to learn how to, you know, use your powers. But along the way, you know, there's this other plot that's going on. During this time, as we were playing this, and as I was still developing the game, I discovered that I had a great uncle who was he basically worked for the government and had a direct hand in residential schools up here in Canada. Mm. I'm going to leave it at that for now, because that is, you know, a topic that can be incredibly triggering. But mm-hmm. needless to say, if you want to know, do a Google search for residential schools in Canada mm-hmm. and you'll get a crash course. But basically what it was is that it involves systemic institutionalization, which was something that Pandora leans on very heavily, because you have characters that are forced to attend an institution for reasons simply because of, you know, who they are, how they were born, you know, and all this other kind of stuff. There are so many real world parallels. And so now that I was starting to struggle with this, you know, first of all, as a citizen of my country, having to confront this issue, but now there's this direct personal thing for me, mm-hmm. you know, where it's just like, you know, fuck, I know this person. I remember this person growing up. And it turns out that they were actually signing the paperwork for some of this crap.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it completely changed the direction of what I wanted to do with Pandora as a designer, but also too as the GM for this particular game. My goal of what I wanted to accomplish changed. And so I stopped everything and basically said to the group, this is what's going on, laid it all out on the table as much as I felt they needed to know without going into particulars, and basically said, and so as a result, this is an area that I need to be able to explore, but I'm not going to expect everyone to just jump on board. Some people just, they wanted to play a Supers game where it was just mm-hmm. like blowing up a skyscraper was an option.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we had five players at the time, there were only two who were interested in proceeding any further. And so as a result, that's a complete change of the story. And it was, we basically called it at that, you know, no harm, no foul, that I know of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I'm starting to, as I've been really looking back and reading the Truth and Reconciliation reports and starting to process this stuff personally, I know specifically what I want to accomplish out of this as I try and go back to, you know, and do this again. But knowing those goals, because they'll change, especially too, over time, you know, gee, I don't know. I think we could all think of, you know, something that happened over the last couple of years that, you know, completely messed with all of our plans.
Hmm.
And we have to make adjustments. And yeah. this, you know, even if that adjustment is enough that completely alter everything and can potentially end it, where everyone says, no, this is not what we're all looking to do. You know, let's move on to something else. That's important because, yeah. you know, it, you know, it's just, it's more about communication, because if I don't let players know that I'm having this issue and I want to use the game to address it, because that's how I do things, but then a player unintentionally keeps pushing that button, not knowing that that's now a button for me, mm-hmm. it's going to, it could get to the point where I freak out and then I don't talk to these people at all anymore. Whereas right. this way, it's something where it's just like, you know, I've got to change the direction. I need to do something different. I need to figure this out. And mm-hmm. I understand, you know, like you guys, you know, can't always, you know, come with me or want to come with me. It is a huge fundamental thing. And right. I think it applies in just any kind of goal setting. It gets to the point where it's just like, I want to move up the corporate ladder and I want to be an executive at this company. And then you start to learn more about the company. It was just like, wow, this company is incredibly evil. And I'm saying this as a former employee of Pet Belly. So I know these things firsthand.
yeah.
And it changes the goal for you and just be like, I don't want to work for an evil company anymore. It's just like, I want right. to do something good with the, you know, with my skills.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier, that not only is setting goals good, part of that is assessing them and being able to let go of them if they no longer serve you. Like if they no longer are what you want, like it's something you wanted at one point, but now that you progressed in that direction and you learned more, you don't want to go that direction anymore. You know, as your example said, yeah, I mean, in the end, cause we're going to be wrapping up. I guess the only thing I want to say is, yeah, as far as goals, setting SMART goals, and looking at those elements and making sure they're in place, being flexible with the goal, realizing that goals are supposed to be and are by nature changeable. They are not an end. They are a target. They are adjustable and changeable and should be, and were never meant to be static. And knowing when to let go of goals and communication of those goals, whether it's you're doing ritual or whether you're in a game, and keeping those goals in mind. What about you? Do you have any final thoughts or summary?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the communication aspect of things, you know, and especially too, I mean, you know, for the majority of stuff that we tend to talk about, you know, there are other people and everything like that involved. I think, you know, another thought that even comes to mind is, even if you are setting goals for yourself of things that you want to do, but they could affect other people, that can be a thing to consider as well. I mean, even if it's one of those things where you want to, you know, cast a spell to help somebody out when they're going through tough times, you know, but there are some people where, you know, they don't want that kind of help, you know, they're not ready for it, or even to, you know, they're not totally comfortable with the idea of somebody casting a spell about, you know, to help them out with a certain situation or something like that. Right. You know, it could, you know, it's a matter of, you know, being open and understanding, you know, that it's, you know, there are other people that are involved, whether or not they are the intended target of the goals that you're setting to help somebody out or something like that. You know, if it's not going to help them, you know, that's something to really consider as well. So communication on all levels.
Yeah.
Because that's almost kind of like saying, it's like, you know what, I'm going to learn how to build a house, and I'm going to do it by watching one episode of a home fix-it show. And then I'm going to get some lumber and some nails, and I'm going to have at it. Well, that's basically being very closed-minded. You're not making yourself open and available to, you know, all the other possible outcomes that could come with it. And as a result, you could end up shooting yourself in the foot. And then it gets, once you start kind of feeling like you're constantly falling backwards more than moving forward, it can be so hard to keep setting goals, because then you feel like, you know, I'm not even anywhere near what I wanted to be at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say that's a big thing, you know, like communication. For me, bar none, that's the way I always look at it. If I'm not communicating with the people involved or anything like that, even spitball into someone else and just be like, I'm thinking of making this my target for the year. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, earlier this year, I really started reaching the point, I was working retail part-time and working part-time at what is now my full-time career of being a tabletop production designer. And I reached a point halfway through the year that I was really thinking, you know what, I'm getting to the point where I really want to try and go full-time with this. And I could go ahead and I could say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do this. But I really wanted to make sure that I was making the right call and not just, you know, making an emotional judgment.
Right.
And so I talked about it with my wife, and it was just like, well, if she thinks it's a good idea, and she's the one that's got more reasonable head on her shoulders when it comes to this stuff, then I know I'm on the right track. And if she's just like, you know, well, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? You know? So yeah, communication. For me, it's right up there.
Yeah. Because often we don't achieve goals on our own, even if they are individual goals, you know what I mean? Other things have to conspire to help those happen. Like if I, like going back to the first example I made of, I'm going to write 1,000 words a day. Well, yeah, that's my own personal goal. And there's not many people involved in that, but it still means that other people have to give me the time to write that 1,000 words. You know, they have to respect when I tell them that that's my goal. They have to respect that. You know, if I tell my husband, hey, I'm going in to write my 1,000 words, and he comes in and interrupts me and stuff like that, you know. So yeah, communication and saying, hey, this is what I'm going to be doing. You know, I need your help if I'm going to accomplish this goal or get closer. You know what I mean? That's important. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, we've been going on.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. Indeed. Well, let us know, anybody listening to this, like, you know, just drop us a line, you know, on Twitter or wherever, and let us know about your own goals. Like, what do you think about what we've been talking about? Like, how do you set your own goals? And, you know, how does that work in your gaming, or how does that work in your life? Or, you know, any magic ritual that you do or anything like that, you know, talk to us about it and let us know if there's anything that we missed.